Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey everyone, welcome to the 141st episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enloe. Today we've got our live episode, live from Sawhorse Productions, with our pals Maureen Barucha, Tim Wilkheim, Sarah Adina Smith, and Tony Yacenda.
Yeah, so we had some technical issues on this one. We had some amazing audio equipment, the same audio equipment we used for our live show at the Famous Group, which worked perfectly when we were there, and it just failed in a very embarrassing fashion.
Sure.
It was, and we had close to 100 people at the live show.
Yeah. It was a packed house, and I think there's something special for our audience to see us belly flop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
About 10 minutes into the recording, I noticed that the hard drive was not recording, and I didn't know what to do, and did we do the right thing, right? We stopped podcast, stopped down, said, hey, there's a fault, an issue here, and we got to start over.
Except
I felt bad because we had already pressured our guests to answer the first question, which was kind of difficult, and they didn't really enjoy the first question.
I think that maybe one of the hardest things about directing is stopping when people are kind of in the middle of something, because you know it's not going to work. You know, you're the one with that information, and oftentimes your whole crew is just thinks things are going fine. So it's hard to say oh, I'm so sorry, you were right in the middle of some great inspirational answer, Maureen, but we have to stop.
Get closer?
No.
Worse than that?
No.
So, I have a new plan. This is what directing is like, just so you guys know. So, we are going to jump into our live show about 10 to 15 minutes into it. But before we do, I'd love to reintroduce our guests, which we did in the live show. We had four amazing guests. They're all working TV directors. Our first guest rose to fame while working at Sprinkles Cupcakes by making short films about the different flavors of cupcakes. And now she directs segments full-time on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live. We have Maureen Barucha.
She also did a couple movies and stuff as well. All right, next. He once live-streamed a marathon trip around the country in a tragic pursuit of directing a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial, and recently directed 14 episodes of True TV's Adam Ruins Everything and segments for James Corden. Originally known as Wilkerson, now he's since merged his last name with his wife's, Tim Wilkheim.
And how cool is this last name merging thing?
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
Next, she made a splash with her feature Midnight Swim, won the love of audiences with Buster's Malhart, and worked her way into HBO's Room 104, FX's Legion, and most recently directed the pilot for Amazon Prime's Hannah. She is Sarah Adina Smith.
He's garnered close to 1 billion views through his little dick e-videos. That killed at the show, you guys. That's Oren's joke. And then went on to create and direct the Peabody Award-winning Netflix series American Vandal. And more importantly, his father has learned about what Tony does by listening to Just Shoot It. Tony Yacenda.
So those were our guests. And then we jumped into asking him the questions about TV directing. We apologize for the audio quality. I mean, we have to apologize. This is, it's not up to our normal standards, but we think our guests are great, and we found a way to record them, and we are really excited about this episode. We really love it. And at the end of our live show, we also had audience questions, about a half an hour worth.
Yeah, some really great questions. We thought that would make a great bonus episode. So the next episode in your feed will be the bonus questions episode. It'll probably post on the same time as this one. So it should already be in your inbox, but check that out.
Great. So now we are going to just jump straight in, media res, into our first question for Tim Wilkheim. We hope you enjoy it. But yeah, Tim, do you want to give us the quick answer to that? Like what you did? What was your first gig? Adam Ruins Everything? On TV.
Yeah, it was, you know, technically it was Adam Ruins Everything. And I got that just because I had been working for Kyle Chimer for many years and just kind of garnered enough relationships through that company that when they were turning that, you know, pilot into a show, they were looking for a handful of directors, and they kind of took a chance on me just because I had expressed interest in doing the show. And then the first season I did just 3 episodes, but I knew, like, if they were to do more episodes, I wanted to do more of it. So just, again, I was passionate about the material, about the show, and I kind of reached out to Adam personally. I was like, hey, like, if you do more, like, I would love to just do as many episodes as you'll give me. And I think just that enthusiasm, I think, probably helped me go from doing 3 episodes the first season to 6 the second, and every season that has followed, I've done a good portion of the series.
What I love about this panel is that I think if you go down the line, everyone has a very distinct path, right? But that it's still relatively repeatable. It's like, okay, you can do an indie movie, you can invent your own job, you can build great relationships with a production company, or you can sell your own show, right? So it's that easy, everyone.
Well, Tim, so you direct also late night sketches, right? You're doing a lot of stuff for James Corden. How is that different than directing, like, for the internet comedy videos?
I mean, it's pretty short answer, unfortunately, but it's, you know, from doing Kyle Chimer to Corden, I have a lot more money to work with, to, you know, just to have enough time to pre-light, to create sets, to, you know, basically any necessity we need for the script, like, we can do that. When, you know, in a Kyle Chimer video, it's like, we only have like 5,000, so like, we can't give you the thing that you really want for this thing.
You basically get the prop, the weird prop, or
but a makeup person. But then the trade-off is, with Corden, you have 2 hours to shoot it. So you're shooting 4 to 9 pages in half the amount of time you would for a Kyle Chimer video. So that's really like kind of the big difference between the two. More money, less time. And usually you're cutting it, you know, the day that you're shooting. Like I'll get the video assigned, you know, on a Tuesday. I prep it on a Wednesday. I shoot it at 10 a.m. on a Thursday for 2 hours. And then we're editing it from 1 to 3. And then it's on air by 4 o'clock. So, you know, with you know, Kyle Chimer, you have weeks to do it.
And so do you think, like, given that you have so much more money, do you think the videos come out better? Or is it still kind of...
I think it kind of depends. Like, so much of the, you know, who you're working with on Corden is, you know, it's kind of talent based, because you're always, it's like, let's make a video with Floyd Mayweather or you know, who's ever a guest on the show. So it kind of just depends on how good they are and how much time they really want to give to the shoot. So I think there's some videos that are better than what I did at Kyle Chimer, and some that, you know, weren't as good. So it's just a trade-off.
Maureen, I'm guessing the same thing probably goes for the stuff you do at Kimmel.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same kind of schedule where, I mean, they have in-house directors. So we're doing, like, lots of little things. I mean, there's celebrity-based things, and there's Man on the Streets, there's Mean Tweets, there's, you know, you could be, maybe I think one time I did, like, a hand insert on a green screen. You know, like, anything that's, like, a pre-tape or a cut-to is what we're doing, and you're getting your assignments at 10. You're shooting, you're doing all your stuff, and it has to be, like, noted up to Jimmy back, you know, by 5. And so that's, like, every day. And then we also have, like, we do integrations, we do commercials, so you have a little bit longer on those. But, yeah, it's, like, it's really fun, and it is, like, just fast-paced, and you have to really make those decisions in the moment. And And you know, a lot of the people have been there for a long time, so there's some really great, talented people that are working on the show, just like making stuff happen.
That's awesome. And how is it? So you have this like full-time job directing, like celebrities directing every day, doing all this awesome stuff. How do you still find time to do your own stuff? Because you're also like making shorts and doing.
I mean, all this stuff. I feel like that's always kind of actually getting Kimmel. I had to like be like, okay, I don't have to work and do like 10 million jobs on the side, but I also feel like I really like that. So it's not hard for me to be like, okay, I'm working at Kimmel, but then we just had a week hiatus and I like wrote a script and then like I'm working on this short and then I'm like trying to get this other feature. So I work a lot with like co-writers. Like I'll come up with an idea and then I have like my friend Ellen, she's working on this comedy that I'm doing, and then I have another friend Dave that we're working on like an Italian thriller, and then I just finished my first like drama pilot. So trying to take those things out and then trying to like get some of my own projects up and going. But I just kind of like to do a lot of things because I feel like one side, because I do comedy and drama, like my features are drama and thrillers, and I feel like it feeds, like one thing feeds the other side of my brain. So actually when I'm not doing a bunch of stuff, I feel like I don't feel as creative. So I have to be doing like 10 things.
But you never feel like, I've made it, I'm getting paid to direct every day. Like I don't need to go like kill myself to make these my own things.
I think the difference for me too is that I come from like shorts and narratives and features and I love Kimmel, but it's not narrative directing. So there's always that drive to tell stories.
There's
and Yeah, so I, like while I'm working there, it's great, and I love it, and it's amazing. It's like it also doesn't take up my narrative storytelling part of my brain, so I can still write and do that stuff and not feel like, oh, I'm having to do all this work. It doesn't feel like work. It just feels like, oh, I'm getting to do kind of both things that I love.
It's also great, like those shows have such a regimented schedule in terms of even vacation.
Yeah.
So you can plan, like, oh, we're going to be on hiatus for this time, like, I'll start calling my friends and lining up a short to do in the interim.
Yeah, and then the thing too is like we, you know, the show's live at 5, so I'm done at 5. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an insane thing for like a director to work from like 10 to 5. It's like insane. So it's like very unusual. And so then, yeah, I have my nights and my weekends like that are...
Like you don't get to the office until 10? And you're done at 5.
It's crazy.
Wait, but aren't you like worried about tomorrow's shoot, like the night before?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, but a lot of stuff you're doing your day of and it's shot and it's done. So you're like, okay, I'm just gonna.
It's not even written yet, right? Like that's why you're coming in at 10, right?
Yeah, some stuff you do. Some stuff, you know, if you have a big shoot, you're worried about it. But then there's things that you're like, okay, I can like pack that away. And like we actually had a shoot. We had a commercial shoot, which is really funny. And again, our shoots are very fast. And so it was this commercial shoot and it was an integration. So we had like a process trailer and we had an extra crew to work the process trailer. And the day was only like 7 hours long. And everyone was like, oh, it's a long day for us. And the process trailer guys were like, what? And I was like, I know, they don't we don't have long days here. Like that kind of shooting. Like there are, people do work really long hours, but the like field shoots are not as, they're not like 12, 14 hour days like normal.
Yeah, sounds good. Who wants to work on Kimmel?
I mean, it's really hard and it's like a lot of pressure. So don't get me wrong. It's compacted into that time.
And it's really easy too, right? It's not like you're thrown into the gauntlet for 35 days of production and then you're done. Like Kimmel's just forever.
Sarah, so you made this micro-budget soft-scripted feature, and now you just made like a giant pilot for Amazon with action, and you shot in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, which one is harder?
First of all, I did not hear the phrase soft-scripted before until tonight.
Oh, it's great,
I
right?
I was like semi-scripted, but soft-scripted is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's like more visual.
Yeah, it's like a little...
Yeah, you just get cozy in the script.
Yeah, push it. Yeah. That's a better way to not say reality. Sometimes that's the code.
Yeah. Oh, right. Or like mock you. Well, you guys are fully scripted, right, Tony? Or you're kind of soft scripted too.
Yeah,
right?
We do have full scripts, but then we go.
Yeah.
On set.
We have a crazy
approach
to set. And we throw it away. But we do have fully scripted.
And Adam Ruins Everything is like every syllable has to be at the right time, right?
Right. It has to be very specific. It pretty much, for the most part, it's all scripted aside from our expert interviews, even those are like outlined for the expert, but they change so much you know, on set for what they feel comfortable or what they feel is accurate. So it's 95% script.
Right. See how I just took the script you guys had with your questions and made it soft? Just curveball that shit right now.
I actually wrote in here, Sarah will probably change this question.
Yeah. What is harder?
What's harder?
Your indie movie or this insane TV pilot?
So I think they were like, it's like sort of both for different reasons. The making of The Midnight Swim was the most like beautiful, easy, magical process ever. But the getting to the making of The Midnight Swim was like 7 years of torturous hell. And like self-loathing.
Right, and just a little context, The Midnight Swim, you lost all your funding like right, like a week before you were supposed to shoot.
On
right?
a different movie.
Tim just audibly
groaned. Yeah. It was for this other movie, but we had already spent money like on casting and like locations for that other movie that fell apart. So then I was like, oh, I gotta just make a movie right now because there's like money that's been spent. And so The Midnight Swim came about because I, hustled and wrote an outline and convinced some actors to come to Iowa. But then once everyone was there, it was just
Why would someone not want to go to Iowa?
Field of Dreams. It was great. It was like this delightful adult summer camp where we just were really creative and collaborative, and it was awesome. And I don't, you know, I would love to have another experience like that. And I think then Hannah on the other side was incredibly hard because it was just this epic adventure in multiple countries, and so we were like prepping in different countries at the same time. And this was incredibly ambitious, and obviously the movie, Joe Wright's movie, is so good. So it's like a lot to live up to, but like on a TV budget. And so like also just trying to remind, I feel like it was my job as the director to remind the producers and the network at every turn like what we were setting out to make. And sort of like helping everybody rise to that occasion. So it was, you know, it took everything out of me. I have this, you can't hear this on the podcast on the radio, but you can see it here. I've got like a white stripe of hair, and that's like, that's Hannah. Like, Hannah just made my hair turn white. But I also loved it and wouldn't trade it for anything, and it was also beautiful.
Can I just ask you, I've always been curious, I guess, like usually in the context of Game of Thrones, how like one director is directing like in 8 different countries. Like, how do you just have to trust people? Like, you don't show up to a castle and say like, nah, we should have the turrets over there, right? Like, how do you direct, like, and figure out the production design and all that stuff if you're not in all these countries?
No, I was going to all those places. So it was like a lot of travel. I was there for a long time. I think it ended up being around like 7 months, including because I did post in London. So I was gone for quite a long time. And then the way we handled it was I did episodes 1 and 2, and it was around, I think, 32 shoot days total for 1 and 2. But those got just sort of shrapneled over space and time because obviously it was like, let's, you know, I think episodes 3 and 4 were mostly shot in Budapest. So it made sense to like table the Spain-Morocco part of my episodes until after that. And so while they were doing that, I'd be prepping Spain and Morocco. So it was a lot of travel.
Okay, so it's not like you start on day 1 and shoot for 32 days and you're done.
No, it wasn't that at all. Yeah.
Cool.
I think we're all just reeling from the thought of like 7 months of shooting.
Oh, I wish. I mean, actually. That, it wasn't. I guess I'm including posts. It was 7 months of being away from my dogs.
Right. Tony, we were teasing a little bit before about how you have a billion views of Little Dicky videos, but I think the thought of like transitioning from online content, sketch comedy, viral content, something that's really viral, into, you know, a bona fide TV show, you know, it's a thing that everyone's still curious about. Did you have a moment where you felt like, oh, now, like, I've proven myself, like, they get it, they trust me?
I don't know if there was ever a moment of clarity like that. I guess there was a moment where I had been for years doing stuff for the web, some of which I was like generating the content and had the idea, some of the stuff like I really loved the idea and wanted to pour my heart and soul into executing it. And then there were some that was branded stuff I didn't believe in, or a script that was given to me and you're just doing it for the job, and you were doing a lot of underwhelming content, and sort of figuring out what was the stuff that I liked to watch. It was a good, you know, 6-year period sort of honing that. But there was never one moment where I'm like, all right, I'm ready for TV. I knew I wanted to do something that used documentary tools, and I was like getting more and more excited about that and watching these true crime documentaries. So then it just happened to be this idea that I really believed in and wanted to put my eggs in those basket, because I really believed in it. But there was never one moment where I'm like, all right, I'm done with web content, right, and I'm looking into
things. It wasn't the Peabody Award? That didn't go to your head?
At this point, I'm like, when we won the Peabody Award, I'm like, ah, maybe I don't need to go and do another branded spot for Curve Body Spray.
Did you, though?
No.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm bummed I didn't get that phone call.
So, next question for everyone on the panel is, now that you're a TV director, is your life set? Like, are you guys all buying houses and retiring at 40? Or are you guys like, do you guys ever worry about like the longevity of your careers?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.